Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another night of Full Spectrum Radio. I am Matt. With me, all as always, is Dennis. What's going on, dude?
Oh, same old, brother. Just another glorious day. Kind of tired, though. I never realized building an ark was so freaking exhausting.
Oh, another wet one for you?
Oh, Jesus. Hey, I will say one positive thing, though. Yesterday was trash day. So everybody rolls their big trash bins out to the curb. Then Mother Nature came along and gave us a nice downpour. I'll be selling the extra trash cans that I have fairly cheap if anybody's interested. The benefits of living at the bottom of the hill at the intersection. I had 5 trash cans in my yard yesterday.
Are you serious?
Yeah. We're like, what the hell? Every dumpster up the road had come my way. It's funny as shit.
That's either a message or just a act of God, I guess, if you will. Literally, act of God.
Yeah, well, when the kids lived here, it would have been wonderful. But now that, you know, wife and I are empty nesters, we really don't need that many trash cans. But it was funny. Anyway, I got a good story for you. Here's the way my day went. This could have been a Monday, but unfortunately I looked and, no, it was a hump day, and guess who got humped? Yes, yours truly. I get a call from a client. coffee going to the wrong pipe. I get a call from a client. Hey, our sump pump stopped working. We've got a lot of water in the crawl space. Can you come see what you can do? Sure. So I go up. This is a non-submergible sump pump. The trip switch on it has failed, so the pump, the motor, and everything itself is underwater. I'm crawling around in a few inches of water. Take out the old pump, put in the new pump, redo my plumbing and everything. It has an anti-backflow device on it. I can't get it to... can't get the new one to prime. So I dumped the new pump in the water a little bit. Trying to get a prime, it won't. I just can't get it to prime past the anti-backflow device. Well, I decide, okay, well, if that's what the trouble is, I will take that portion of pipe off, get it to prime, and then while it's got the prime, I'll be able to put the anti-backflow on and finish out my plumbing. So I break the pipe apart, dunk the pump in the water real quick, just enough to get a prime built, Apparently it had a little bit of a prime anyway, because the instant that bastard hit the water, it sprayed me in the face with about 80 gallons per minute. I immediately jerked back to get away from the water spray that is now blowing into my face. I slammed my head on a joist. I dropped the pump, which obviously goes right back into the sump pit. And to get away from the searing pain that is now the back of my head, I leaned forward, which is right where the spray is now coming from the pump. So I shot myself in the face with the damn thing again. Needless to say, I was soaked. I had a massive headache. Oh, yes, let's not forget the fact that I knocked over the purple primer, which is extremely strong smelling in a crawl space and will create massive headaches. So if it wasn't for the joist trying to knock me out, the purple primer trying to get me stoned and finish off the headache, it would have been a great day.
Was it the first one or the last one of the day?
Actually, it was one of two calls for the day, and that was the last of the day. Which, thank goodness, because I would have blown off the second one and rescheduled if I had another one after it. I couldn't hardly see straight. It felt like I got clubbed with a ball bat. Which, well, I guess when you think about it, I sort of did. The floor joist nailed me in the back of the melon.
But, yeah, I mean, they're not soft.
No. I mean, it could have been worse by all means. I could have knocked my dumb ass out and fell face first into the sump pit.
Or the primer.
Yeah, that would have been the only thing to make it worse. You know, a rich old man died today when he knocked himself out and fell face first into a sump pit. They had to break the foundation open because apparently he fell face first onto the supply, and it bloated his body to 12 times normal with all the water he was retaining.
Yeah, it definitely could have been worse, that's for sure.
The joys of the job. So how are you guys holding up in your neck of the woods, brother? How's Chicago area?
Doing all right. It's a balmy 44 degrees right now and overcast. It's a perfect end of April weather.
Well, could be worse. You're not asshole deep in snow.
Surprised, so, actually.
Yeah, really. So, on a different note, this weekend I will be a guest speaker at St. Albans Asylum in Radford, Virginia. Jason Fenton from Ghost Chat Radio is hosting an event there. For Friday, he's doing a one-day-only sale on tickets and so forth. So for $45, you get to listen to four different speakers, one being Tara Street. She's going to be talking about team safety, personal safety, location safety, things of that nature, along with, you know, not just physical but spiritual safety as well. Jason Stanton, who's written a pretty good book, actually. He will be there also, obviously. It's his event. And I'm understanding that he's going to have his books there, willing to sign them. Trying to find the name of the book now. I can't recall it for the life of me. Unrested Dead. So, anyway, we will have that. Pat Broussard, who is a psychic and also an author, she will be there. And then we will top it off with an overnight investigation of St. Albans Asylum. Now, if you've never been there, I will tell you this. I went last Saturday and did an overnight investigation there. There is nowhere in that building that you'd feel like you're being watched. It's just unbelievable. And I just got a message from Brad that he'll be calling in a few. So no big deal. But we do have Brad Kling joining us tonight, ladies and gentlemen. He's just running a little bit behind. But I've been notified that he will be calling in shortly. Hey, Lyle, thanks for joining us, brother. At any rate, I was going through EDPs the other night. Actually, I was just going through my video. I've got 4.5 hours off video. And I found some really cool shit on video. And I want to talk about intelligent response. Now, this is all off the audio portion. I've got some video clips that are kind of puzzling, too. But the audio off the camera was fantastic. At one point, you hear this bang that sounds like it's fairly close to the camera. And about 40 feet away, I guess, is one team that's investigating. And you hear them stop. You hear them ask, what was that? And I have a wonderful female voice on audio off my video camera that says, it was me. And she sounds like she's fairly close to the camera. So that was pretty cool. I've got another one that at two different times, the team close by is asking, can you tell us your name? And I've got two responses, both in the same voice. One says, it sounds like it says Timmy. The other one sounds like it says Timothy. And they both sound like they're real close to the camera. I'm still working on going through all my audio recorders, which will probably kill me. But there is just a huge amount of captures coming out of this place. We've got a couple of different voices. Just fantastic location. One of the coolest things, there were 11 of us in the group. Well, during the tour, we're all down in the bowling alley. There's a little two-lane bowling alley. It's in like a sub-basement. It's pitch-frickin' black. And as usual, I stand a little ways behind any group. I just keep my distance from groups to get energy from what's around me instead of from the group. Well, while Jessie, who's the volunteer, was leading us around and she's doing the speak about, you know, we've had this and that happened down here, she takes a pause, and from behind me I hear like this muffled female voice. And almost instantly, like 4 or 5 flashlights turn and look at me, and I'm just kind of going, yeah, y'all heard that too? And I pointed over my shoulder, and I went, she's like right behind me, isn't she? And everybody kind of giggles, going, yeah, that's what it sounded like. I'm like, yeah, it was like real close to my ear. And then everybody goes, well, who just went down the hallway? About 4 feet to my right and a few feet behind me is a doorway leading out to a hall. I did a real quick head count, and it wasn't one of us. So I poked out in the hallway real quick, shot a flashlight down the hall, but I didn't see anything. But 4 or 5 of them saw somebody walk out the hallway. Well, it's a rather long hall. They couldn't have just vanished in that few 2 seconds or whatever. So, and that was all just during the tour. So you can imagine what the rest of the night was like. So, folks, if you're anywhere near Radford, Virginia, definitely check out this event at St. Albans Saturday. It should be a blast.
Yeah, the people that are running it and the people that are involved with it are, I give them all a stamp of approval on knowledge, on professionalism, on not being arrogant, willing to help. And it's a great group of people that's getting together and doing this. And if I could, I'd go, but it's kind of a little bit of a drive.
Yeah, something tells me you're not going to make a 9-10 hour drive. But it's worth it. It really is. One of the really cool places about that or one of the really cool things about the people, Marcel and Jesse and all them that run this location, they've done a lot of research on what has occurred there. They've done a lot of research on the location, as many people as they can that have had anything to do with it over the years. And they're really accommodating. While we were there, they've got a coffee pot and a microwave and all that. And they're like, oh, just make yourself at home. You know, anything that you need while you're here, just let us know if we can help. there's very few electrical drops in the whole place. They're like, we've got a few drops around. You can run extension cords if you want to. But for the most part, it is totally without power. So, there was very little interference on K2 from electric drops or anything like that, but just very accommodating folks. I mean, if you get the chance to book a investigation at St. Albans Asylum or Sanatorium, I definitely recommend you do it. Fantastic people, Marcel and Jesse and all of them that work out there. But I see that we have a guest on deck.
Hey, Dennis, one thing real quick. Did you see that thing that I posted about the Hiram Scott Mansion?
Yeah, I did. I think we should go together and buy it, dude.
That's what I'm thinking, too. The Hiram Scott Mansion is a national landmark. It's in Joliet, Illinois. Built as a private home. It's all brick. It's 4,960 square feet. It is for sale for $159,000 only. It's a beautiful, beautiful home. I have the pictures and the link to it up on my Facebook page. It was built in 1882. There were two murders and at least two suicides in the home. It has been investigated. My friend John Stevenson was actually there at one point and checked it out. Ursula's been there a whole bunch of times. And says that it's absolutely beautiful. What's really funny, come to find out, is I asked my friend Dolly, since she works in the news and it was posted by Fox News, asked her if she had heard anything about it. She works for WGN and CLTV, and she goes, no, I haven't. And then she texts me back probably about 15 minutes later, and she goes, Brian, who's her boyfriend, is the realtor on the place. So guess where I get to go?
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, found that out yesterday. So anyway, just thought that was really, really cool. So for the local people who are listening, I'm going to be talking with them and setting up possibly something soon, just whenever he can get an okay. From the city.
Public event would be awesome.
You know what? Here was my thinking about this place. Is I did put it out there, hey, does anybody want to go in with this or go in on this with me? This is something I've been considering. How cool would it be being a historical place so hopefully nobody buys it and tears it down and blah, 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 and remodels it, does something modern to it. Keep it the way it is. Not just that, be able to have a place that we can hold public events at and people can check it out. You can rent the place out for the weekend for basically whatever the price of whatever the breakdown. If I could book three a month, that would cover the mortgage on the place, or turn it into a haunted B&B, but period correct.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. But, well, I have Brad is in queue, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him in now.
That works.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Kling. He is one of the Kling brothers from Everyday Paranormal. You may have seen him on Discovery Channel's Ghost Lab. Was one of the original paranormal shows, I think, and probably one of the best ones that has been. Good evening, Brad. Welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, Rob, Dennis. How's it going?
What's going on, Brad?
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Are you on speakerphone, Brad?
No, I'm not, actually. I'm got the phone right to my head.
Uh-oh. All right. Well, maybe it's just our connection, and I'm sure it'll clear up and get better. So I see that you're starting to do like the independent here with investigations and small groups. I like the idea. Can you give us some insight into it?
Yeah, you know, it's Barry and I have always done small groups, smaller groups than the norm. You know, we don't pack 100, 150 people in the places like some places do. We always looked at the size of the place and figured out what's going to be comfortable and, you know, kept the cost low, you know, so everyone could afford it and enjoy themselves. But there was still too many people. It was just still, you know, if you put 20, 25 people into a place, there's still people walking around. There's some people who get bored. There's some, you know, so I really wanted to do something where we could do these events. And actually, you know, Barry has started his own fishing guide service. So he's not doing this with me anymore. So it's, you know, it's Kling Brother. So he's off doing his own thing. And I'm continuing down the road of these events and also, you know, my filming and documentaries that my other love of what I'm doing right now. But as far as events are concerned, I decided to take a look at, you know these nice places, bed and breakfasts and all these places, but not pack 30 people in there. Only take 10, 11, 12. Just enough where it's a small group. It's like a group of friends. You sit around, you tell stories, you investigate, and the entire weekend you go and do things. Like, for example, the other day I announced when I'm going to do one in Gettysburg, and in less than 24 hours I had it was all full up. And what I'm doing is I'm basically just covering costs. So I'm just like, I'm teaching one's friends, say, hey, you want to go to somewhere? Here's what the total cost is going to be. We have 12 people divided by 12. That's your cost. And, you know, it works out that way because everyone wants to do it. But the difference between them doing it and me doing it is I can get into certain places. I can get better deals. I can get into places that people normally can't just because of the relationships that I have built over the years and doing Ghost Lab and being known. It kind of helps in that, and I kind of take it, you know, use it to my advantage and get these really, really cool places at really good prices and get these small groups in there, and we have a really good time. And so we'll be heading up to Gettysburg for a weekend in August with about 12 people, and that's going to be great. And I'll be doing more events like that. I'll be doing them out in California. I have some places here in Texas that we're going to do, but we'll be all over the country. So if you want to keep a watch out for something that comes near you, you know, they sell out fast. This one in less than 24 hours.
Now that's pretty damn quick. I don't know if you caught earlier where I was talking about the event that I'm going to be a part of this weekend at St. Albans, but have you been to St. Albans?
No, I haven't.
Oh, yeah, we definitely need to get you up here. maybe we'll run through you and book an event there and later on in the year.
Where exactly is that?
It's in Radford, Virginia, which is about an hour outside of Roanoke. And started early 1900s as a boys' school. 1911, it shut down and became a family care type facility for the challenged, mentally, physically, whatever. But it became St. Albans Sanatorium at that point. And just closed down in the late 80s, early 90s. But some horrific stories come out of there. So have you done, speaking of sanatoriums and asylums and so forth, have you done any of those in the past? I know that Ghost Lab was all over the place. Trying to remember all the episodes,
oh, yeah,
I certainly can't.
We've done a lot, lots of prisons, hospital, abandoned hospitals, abandoned asylums. We've got our share of smelling mold and stepping through water filled basements and things that all abandoned buildings come with. Especially that mold smell. It all smells the same.
Yeah, it's nothing like walking around. Yeah, nothing like walking around getting a little black lung.
Yeah, a little lead paint, dripping off the earth. We did one episode up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, at the state hospital, and there was an old morgue that was a part of the state hospital. It was state offices now, but several years prior, even back in the 1800s, it was a mental institution for the state of Pennsylvania. And the morgue was way back in the woods. It hasn't been used in years. And the radon, we actually did a study on radon, talking about radioactivity, how the radioactivity and the half-life of certain elements could possibly cause, energy to manifest paranormal activity. Because we're always into the energy and what's fueling it. And the radon levels there were so high that we had the EPA actually come in and measure this stuff. And what's funny is our episode was based on radon, but when you watch it, they don't mention one word about radon because the levels were so high that they didn't want it to get out to the public that, they had dangerously high levels of radon there. It was so high that it was the equivalent of if you spent an hour in the building, it was the equivalent of smoking a carton of cigarettes. It was that bad.
Damn.
So, of course, they told us that. We didn't get those findings until, days later, and we had already been in the building for hours upon hours. But I guess that's where no one says that this job doesn't come with its hazards, and that's one of them. These abandoned buildings are not safe structurally a lot of times, and, definitely breathing this stuff.
Yeah, that's and don't forget the bats.
Oh, yeah. Everywhere you go is a bat. And I hate bats, too, just because they're just erratic. You can't tell where they're going.
Yeah. I got stuck watching my video, and I kept seeing something move across the screen, just quick flashes. And I'm like, what the hell was that? And then I realized there's a damn bat in the building I'm catching on night vision.
Yeah.
But he darts around so quick, and I'm like, what in the hell? And then he just happened to bank a turn just right, so he was sprawled out. And I'm like, okay, now I know what the hell it was. Just thank God I didn't walk into the little bastard.
Our camera crews hated it because their cameras, have frequencies on them and things like for the transmitting. And those bats, obviously, they pick up on sonar and stuff. And whenever you have those big cameras in there, man, those things would go nuts. And they dive bomb those camera guys. They hated it. I probably 9 times out of 10 place where there was always a bat somewhere.
Yeah. And, one of the weird things, and I can't figure out, like these things, like St. Albans has, there's 68,000 square feet, and there's like a basement and then a sub-basement. There's no windows, obviously, in a sub-basement. How in the hell did the bats get in the sub-basement? Needless to say, yeah. You'll be walking down you'll be walking down this pitch black hallway and staring at a little 2-inch LCD screen and you'll hear shoot by your head and it's like, what in the living hell was that? Oh, damn bat.
Rats with wings.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't mind rats. I can pretty much assure they're going to run from me. And if not, they're going to get a size 11 boot in the ass. But a bat, you can't catch a little bastard. Tennis racket. That's what I'll take next time. Entertainment value.
I just got a mental image of, that has to do with both of you. It popped in and each of you guys were different characters in different spots, but just an image of Scooby-Doo popped in my head of what you were describing, but each of you were like a Scooby-Doo character. Right. Talk about bats and rats with wings, which made me think of rats. I don't know where that came from. I apologize. But, yeah, I just got an image of both of you as Scooby-Doo characters walking through. Dennis was obviously Shaggy.
Yeah, the one thing I'm actually more scared of, the one thing I am the most terrified of is, of all things, are wasps. If I see a wasp flying, I will run as fast as I can the opposite way. And never really been stung by one, like a wasp. I can't remember being stung by a wasp, but I guess that's why, because every time I see one, I run like hell.
Well, it's like the T-shirt says, I'm a ghost hunter. If you see me running, try to keep up.
and you got, I grew up in Texas, man. You got the big Texas wasp down there.
Yeah. And my wife sends me out around the house all the time with a can of wasp spray to kill them all, too. So that's a sight to see.
I got hit when I was growing up in Houston. I got hit by about 8 or 10 of them all at once that were underneath the mailbox. I was younger. I was out there playing, and apparently I knocked the mailbox wrong and pissed off about 8 or 10 of them that were on the hive. And the difference with a wasp is it's not like a bee where they sting you once and they lose their stinger. A wasp will keep going. And the wasps in Texas are about the size of, I'd say, from your knuckle to the tip of your finger, usually. They're big, at least the ones that hit me.
Right.
Like, they're not bullshit when they say everything is bigger in Texas, especially the wasps.
Yeah, we get a lot of carpenter bees around here that are, they're probably 2 inches long. They look like a little mini football buzzing around.
That's the only thing I get nervous about when, you know, going into these abandoned places is that, you know, there's got to be beehives, there's got to be nests, there's got to be bats, there's got to be all this other kind of stuff. And it's, you know, half the time you're looking for ghosts and your other eyeball is looking for that kind of stuff, making sure you don't bump into it.
Yeah, and, you know, a face full of cobweb. Hey, that reminds me. One of the theories, and I'm going to ask you simply because you've been in this so long. One of the theories is that when you feel like you've got a face full of cobweb, yet there is no cobweb, is it, what's your opinion on that being spirit having interacted with you?
Well, it's, you know, it's anything. It depends on where you're at, because if you've ever walked into static electricity, or, you know, if you rub a balloon on your head and you put it against your face, you can feel that tingling sensation. It's the same sensation. It's electricity. It's static electricity. And if it's not coming from anywhere, if you're in a stone place or something that's, you know, pretty much grounded from static electricity, you have to kind of take notice that, hey, you know, why am I getting this feeling? And the way we operate, it's you don't just get the feeling and say, cool, I got a feeling of spider webs. You know, that's an indication to do something else. Stop and do an EVP session. Take a bunch of pictures. Take a bunch of video. You know, it's a warning sign. Also, say, hey, something could be happening right now. You know, here's your opportunity to possibly get something. So, if you get a feeling like that, and there's no other reason, you know, it could be natural electricity, but what's causing it?
Speaking of photography, how much do you rely on, like, do you just use spirit or physical, like just still photography as something to reference for yourself, or is this something you actually present as, hey, look what we found?
A lot of times photography is used as just a point of reference of, you know, hey, look, here's a picture 5 minutes before this chair was moved, you know, and you can see no one was in the room. It was in this position. It's just a reference point. Now, you know, I'm not going to present a photograph that has like a blur or a blob or, you know, something like that on it. But, you know, we've caught, there's probably 2 or 3 pictures that we've caught over, you know, years that it's like there's a dude or there's someone standing in the picture that was not there. And those are the kind of, and it's not like, hey, do you see that head over there? It looks like a giant head, and it's like a cartoon character. That's Major Scene. But I'm talking about it is almost like an apparition that you see with your eyes, how real that is, but on a photograph. And those are the kind of things that we'll present. But you got to be real careful about photographs, especially people walk up to me all the time and they say, hey, I got this picture at this place the other day. What do you think? And, you know, I have to tell them, well, it's cool, but I wasn't there. So I don't know if there was a mirror over here or some, a reflective surface or a light coming in or, you know, whatever the case may be. But I would say, but if, you know, if you validated all that, then, yeah, it's a pretty cool picture. But I can never base judgment, you know, if something's real or not if I didn't take it. And then I don't expect other people to believe it either because they weren't there. It's your own personal proof.
Yeah, I get stuff from people, you know, in different countries throughout the world that say, oh, what do you think of this photo? Like, it's cool, but I can't say yay or nay. If you got anything, one, I wasn't in the environment. I know nothing about it. So,
yeah, and there's also stuff that a lot of times is obviously photoshopped or something like that. I mean, you can just kind of tell it's bad photoshopping. And
oh, yeah.
They know it and they want to trip you up, or they, you know, they really don't know it. So that's why you just always take the, you know, well, you have to continue X, Y, and Z, and if you've done all that, then, hey, you know, it could be something.
And learn Photoshop better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've gotten some good ones that I'll open it up, I'll be like, really? Really? You don't want to be a jerk, you know? I mean, it's like, you don't want to call them out, but at the same time, you also don't want to implement yourself as being like, oh, well, yeah, it's interesting. So
yeah,
I figured
out.
And
any of the photographs that I've ever seen, you know, that of the ones I've taken that are interesting, it's a weird position. It's not like it's that classic screaming banshee, ghoulish looking zombie ghost or something like it. It's like I have not ever seen anything like that before. If ghosts are truly images of energy of the past, or, you know, a residual energy or otherwise, then it's going to take the form of the things that were in life, you know. And so if someone dies, they're not going to become some evil-looking ghoul with a sheet over its head. I mean, that's just not going to happen. You have to look at the paranormal from a logic perspective also, and then a lot of people don't. They base it off of what they see in movies.
And that's one of the things that irritates me to no end is you'll see, you know, a lot of the teams go in and they try to do investigations the way they see on TV, which what they don't think about is all the editing and everything that's been done before they got to see it. And, you know, they're basing the way they investigate on what they think actually happens from, you know, hours of footage that they don't get to see.
Oh yeah, hours upon hours. We would show up at one location. Like our show was an hour long, and you had usually two locations per 30-minute segment. You know, for the first 30 minutes it was one location, and the second half of the hour is another location. Well, those 30-minute segments are really whittled down to 21 minutes. You know, because you have commercials. So in each one of those locations, we were at for at least 3 days, 3 and 4 days. So, and we worked, you know, 16, 17-hour days a lot. So 16, 17 hours a day times 3, think of how much footage that is, whittled down to 21 minutes. So, yeah, you don't see a lot that goes on. They have to hit the highlights. And that's another thing. You have to hit the highlights because most of it's boring. I mean, how many times have you sat there for hours and hours and nothing's happening? Well, they don't have time to show all that. They've got to show them the stuff's happening. People see that. They're like, oh, man, ghost hunting must be able to walk into this place and just, you know, things start flying around. And, you know, in 30 minutes, I got what I need, and I can leave. It's not a fun house. And that's where a lot of people, that first-time investigators that come to these types of events, they kind of have that in the back of their head. It's funny to watch them. They're so excited to go. And you get in there, and the first 15 minutes, they're like, Okay, I want to go outside and stand around for a little bit and smoke a cigarette. They get bored really fast.
Yeah, and then, well, like myself, here the last few days, I've spent hours and hours reviewing everything, and I still have more to do. I had four recorders running a video camera for 6 hours. And they see this little 30-minute clip, or, as you said, 21 minutes, and they're like, wow, man, they got that much, and they were there just overnight. No. It didn't all happen just overnight, folks.
We've had comments on, on our blog sites and stuff that, people would, they literally say, how can you guys think, how do you think we should take you seriously when you walk into a place and the first 30 minutes you get something and then second 30 minutes you get something else? It's like, really? Are you really that dumb to believe everything? And it's not, you have to be careful about saying, you believe what you see on TV because what it is real, but it's a summarized version of what you're doing. An extreme summarized version. It's the extreme Cliff Notes version of an investigation. And, if every network could take 3 days to show one investigation, they would. But guess what? They wouldn't make any money because no one would be watching. They're so bored.
Well, I've actually wondered that with a lot of the, like Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures have done it on Halloween where they have the episodes where it's all quote-unquote live. On location, everything's live, and you can tweet with, what's going on and this, that, and the other thing. And, it plays for, 6 hours, but it's nowhere near the amount of stuff that they get. And the reason I watch those shows is for what people tweet about of, supposedly how much stuff that they missed and what the other people saw in the background that they didn't see. Well, there was a camera that was fixed on it. So I'd say maybe about, I'll call graciously 10% of people that are watching that you see their tweet pop up on the screen. Did you see that in the background? Okay, well, yeah, may have saw something, but I'm sure it probably would have been time-stamped and broadcast later because after the investigation's over, they don't just say, oh, well, we got what we got. No, they'll have a follow-up show. And I'm sure that you guys experienced it too. When you have the film crew that's there with their audio, their cameras, all that stuff, that's all taken into consideration and maybe they got something too other than the cameras and the audio that you guys are holding.
Yeah, and what's funny is there's a, in the filming industry, there's a term called the fourth wall. And producers and networks, they never want to break what they call the fourth wall, which means they want the viewers to feel as if they are there with you alone, that we are in a place by ourselves and the viewer is going along for the ride with you. As soon as you show a camera guy or someone, it ruins the experience for the viewer. And I argued with Discovery Channel. I said, no, on the contrary, in Ghost Investigation, it legitimizes what you're doing more. Because there was one occasion where I insisted that we use the cameraman's footage because it was really cool. It was in Cleveland. There was a house, and this woman she was plagued by this shadow figure that was always, moving around. And we found that there was this column of energy that was this high EMF that went from the basement all the way up in a direct column through this three-story house. And her bed was metal, and she said that so that conducts electricity, and she said she saw this thing in her bed. Well, Barry was sitting on the girl's bed, and he had a video camera. He had, sometimes he turned the handy cam to himself, like a little diary. And he talked into it. Well, he happened to catch, and he saw it in the viewfinder, a shadow go up behind him. And he looked around, and he saw that there was a camera guy, and the camera guy's eyes were like big as saucers because he saw it too, but he had the best angle on it. In fact, it was so good that you could see the shadow rise up from behind Barry, go over the wall, and just kind of slink out this window. And nothing else was moving. But had that cameraman not been there to get that angle, it would have just been kind of a, you know, someone could have said, oh, it was Barry moved and it was his arm that made the shadow. But we insisted, and if you watch the episode, we bring the camera guy in, we review the footage, he talks about how there's nothing, he's never even seen anything like that in his life, all of his years of being a director of photography, and it just legitimized the situation. And I wish that more paranormal shows would do that, because we always looked at the production crew as just a whole other set of investigators, another set of eyes and ears, and it worked out for us.
Well, how much stuff did your film crew and audio crew and all that stuff catch that never made it on air?
I would say there was probably, see, there was that one instance made it on air. I would say that there's probably three or four more probably big instances that probably should have been, you know, made it to the air based on what they caught, but it wasn't. And not only that, but our investigators caught some really cool evidence sometimes. But, like, for example, we were at Alcatraz, and, you know, the story is that, you know, we're trying to find, it could be these inmates, and we get a voice we think is a name, and we try to research the name to see if it's an inmate, blah, blah, blah. And we're trying to find, you know, Robert the Birdman Stroud and all this other kind of stuff. Steve Hawk, who, you know, he was the one who kind of a historian, he ran the lab a lot, was up in the infirmary of Alcatraz. And he got the clearest, and I can't remember what it says, I have to go back and look at my files. He got the clearest EVP. It was three or four words long. It was in a very deep, clear, resonating voice. And they didn't use it simply because whatever it said didn't follow the storyline. It said something random. So because it didn't follow the storyline, like it wasn't a name, it wasn't something that we could, it was just like some phrase, they didn't use it because they were afraid, well, the users aren't going to the viewers are not going to understand. And it's like, well, bullcrap, they're not going to understand. It's a voice that wasn't there, guys. We're looking for freaking ghosts. And we got one. I don't care if it doesn't follow your story. I'm sorry that, you know, we get that. Okay, ghost, can you please follow the storyline? And that's the what happens is it's not scripted. But they do have to have a formula as to why we're there, what we're trying to accomplish, and, you know, and stick with that. Because if we go, because you know how ghost investigations can go in 100 different directions, because you find something and you find something else and it leads you down another path. And, you know, unless they can write for that in the end to edit it to make it a 21-minute segment of a show, you know, they can't do that. And I have to, you know, I kind of have to understand that, because editing, now that I'm on the editing and filming side, it is so hard. But our show really did kind of do a better job of going with the flow and changing direction if it had to. But in certain situations, we had to throw out a lot of really cool evidence because, you know, they just didn't use it in the show.
Yeah, and that, you know, one of the ones that I watch now is a, I'll just throw the name out, Ghost Files. I have never seen them present anything that production has captured, and I've always questioned, you know, how much does production actually capture? You know, and
funny story. Our very, very first episode we ever filmed in June of 2009, we're at the Shreveport, Louisiana Municipal Auditorium, okay? Big auditorium. Elvis Presley got a start there, Louisiana Hayride, all these country singers like George Jones and all that, they all got their start there. Well, there was their sound guy. He was new to the paranormal. He'd done other TV shows. He'd never done a paranormal one. So he was just kind of, this is kind of BS, and I'm not sure about this, you know, whatever. Well, he had his headphones on, and if you've ever seen the sound gear that these guys carry, it is unbelievably sensitive, expensive. I mean, they can hear a mouse fart, you know, at 30 yards. And he was hearing voices over in his headphones that was freaking him out, because he's a sound engineer. He knows that these aren't supposed to be there, but yet he was hearing them and recording them. So he got so scared that we had to escort him to the restroom. Every time he had to go to the restroom, we had to walk him down the hall, wait outside the door while he went to the restroom, and then walk him back, because he was afraid, because he heard disembodied voices that there's something that's in these halls that's out to get me. That's how he felt. But he recorded a lot of stuff, and none of that made it to the show.
And to me, I think it's kind of a shame that, you know, you got, I don't know how many cameras they have following them around and everything, doing production on, you know, the shows now, but to me, it's a lot of great evidence that just doesn't get revealed because it comes off of the production cameras. And, you know, it could be that one piece of evidence that ties everything together on that location, but it ends up on the cutting room floor. And it, you know, kind of upsets me that they do that.
Yeah, well, if it was pivotal to, you know, the investigation, we made sure that, just like, you know, my Cleveland example of that shadow. But here's one that this irritated me a little bit. We were at Lake Superior on the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and there's a lighthouse museum there. And this is Lake Superior, right off, that's where the Edmund Fitzgerald sank years ago. And they call it the graveyard of the Great Lakes, you know, because they had, like, I don't know what it is, 2,000 shipwrecks out there, because, you know, it's real stormy out. It's almost like an ocean. We had an idea, because there were some divers who said, hey, let's go out on one of these shipwrecks and actually dive on it with submarine submersibles and take our equipment down in waterproof containers and do an investigation on a shipwreck underwater in Lake Superior. Well, they didn't let us do it. We wanted the ones to be scuba dive down, but they had the team go out, you know, the scuba team go out, and we were up on the deck of the boat, and we directed them on what to do. We were watching them on monitors underneath the water, and we got some weird stuff. But the weirdest thing was, at the same time, to the minute that we were on the boat, Corey and Katie, who are also on our team, were in the museum investigating. Okay, this was during the day, probably about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They got an EVP that said, on the Myron. And the question was, what ship did you die on? And a voice came back really clear. It says, on the Myron. Well, guess what ship we happened to be diving on? At the same time, they got that EVP, the Myron. And they didn't play it like that. When it got edited, they said, oh, Corey and Katie got this EVP on the Myron, and that led us to go out to the shipwreck. And it's like, no, that's not how it was. And it made us mad, because it was so much cooler that we were on the shipwreck, the Myron, and a voice back in the museum said, on the Myron. But they didn't think that people would understand that. They needed a storyline, an A, B, and C that they could follow. And it's like, you guys think the people are so stupid. They can watch TV. But, you know, that's the way it is. And Barry and I didn't realize that they ended like this until we were actually sitting, you know, down in our living rooms watching the show like everybody else was.
Yeah, that's, you know, and thinking from a timeline perspective, that would have been a hell of a lot cooler to air that way. Then Aaron's like, oh, well, they got the CVP, so we have to check this place out.
Yeah, and that's how they played it. And it's, I don't know. You're right. It would have taken a little bit more, probably, explanation to, you know, kind of tie the two that we were out there and whatever. But whatever. It could have been done. But I think in the sake of timeliness, where they had to get something edited and out, they just had to do a quick sequence and get it done. And for paranormal investigators, yeah, it's about to understand, editors in Hollywood, they're not paranormal investigators. They're storytellers. So they don't understand the importance of sequence of events in paranormal investigation. They just care about sequence of events and storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, it took me 5 seconds when you said that to think of it. Like, if they, and just spitballing here, and And let me know if this confuses everybody so much that you couldn't figure it out. All right. They have footage of the dive team. And I said, meanwhile, we have them at the historical place doing research on this place, and they caught this EVP while they're down there. I think
we
that's...
We had a thermal camera. We had a thermal camera on the boat, and I was on the deck, the back deck of the boat, and I was just filming that over the water, and this hot heat signature came up from the water on the opposite side from where the divers were and went back down. It was really clear. It was really weird looking. And we verified, and I said, Barry, where are the divers at? And they were like 100 yards away on the other side of the boat. It's like, what was that? And it was really, you know, and if we're not going to say, oh, it was a ghost coming out of the water, but we could have presented it and said, look at this weird heat signature that we got coming out of the water nowhere near where the divers were. And that's really, you know, kind of segmenting into what I'm doing now. That was kind of my motivation for filming and doing my own documentaries, because now I have the filming experience. I know how it's done. I know how to film. I know how to edit. I know about lighting. I know about all this other kind of stuff. Put something together in the right way, even if it doesn't make sense sometimes, you know, but it's how the story goes, and you're your own boss, basically. You control how everything is how the story is told. And that's, you know, where we did this. I don't know if you watched our what we call the Dead Truth, which was our kind of our first stab at editing and filming. And now my newest, and then we did the Shadows on 66, the Galena Murder Bordello, which I actually am nominated for an Emmy Award, believe it or not, for that. And then this newest project that I have called Curiosity, that we are set to start filming next month. Actually, tomorrow's May. We start to start filming in May, and the first episodes will come out in the summer sometime. And I actually have it's a YouTube channel. YouTube is the way to go these days. I don't know if you've noticed, but YouTube is actually being advertised on network television. You know, people are starting their own businesses. They're do what you want to do. And it's a great place. Everybody knows YouTube. Everybody has YouTube. And it's actually more accessible than a lot of these cable networks. And the cool thing about it is, you know, like I said, I can do anything I want out there. So that's going to start airing, and it's top-notch quality. I'm talking about the filming quality, the editing quality. It is like any the best of TV shows that you see out there, but it's going to be on YouTube.
Well, so I definitely have to subscribe to that one.
Yeah, hey, you know what else is kind of up and coming in that, too, and I don't know if you guys have considered it, is Hulu has their own kind of web-based series that are, you know, that you don't have to have a rating. Like, if it's on it in the afternoon, it has to be PG because it's Hulu. And through Hulu Plus, but yeah, I mean it's full seasons of whatever.
Yeah, Hulu,
you know,
Hulu
pretty much.
Yahoo is starting to have its own series. Netflix is starting to have its own series. It's the way television is going, because you know, for one, people are tired of paying outrageous cable prices. You know, it's like I pay like $280 a month for cable. I probably have like 9,000 channels. I watch maybe 5 of them. If that, you know, if I'm lucky to watch TV. And this and everything is so instant, you know, instant gratification these days. People want to watch when they want to watch. And, you know, the traditional advertising is going away from television, and it's going on the Internet. And, you know, I'm riding the wave of the future here, but at the same time I'm having a ball. I'm having a blast, you know, going to all these different locations and telling these stories. And it's a different series. It's not a paranormal investigation show. It is, you know, I'm kind of the third party witness or, you know, viewer to people's very weird and strange stories that involve ghosts, or it could be, you know, alien encounters, or it could be, you know, it could be like possessions. It could be winged creatures. It could be you know, it's anything and everything that's considered paranormal, but true stories. And, you know, I'm out there kind of investigating the story itself.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So I'm going to change gears a moment. Now, I'm sure you've heard the controversy and the hype about Zach and the Ghost Adventures crew refusing to go back on the property at Bobby Mackey's. I know you and Barry had been there.
Uh-huh.
What is your take on Bobby Mackey's? Do you think it's as bad as Zach has made it out to seem, as demonic and everything?
Let me tell you this. Of all, and nothing against Bobby Mackey's, you know, the place could be, you know, very haunted just when we happen to be there. That is the one place that I didn't get a single even an experience at. And I was down in, what do they call it, Hell's Hole or whatever that.
Oh, Hell's Gate.
Down there. Hell's Gate. I got down in there. Tormented the crap. People were going, oh, my God, you can't torment this thing. It's blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know what? Come on out and do something. And nothing. I didn't get an EVP. I didn't get an experience. I didn't get, and that's rare that you don't even get a single experience. And that's not to say that, you know, because there are places where, I guess if you hit it on an off night or whatever. But, you know, just words of the wise, these guys are on television this long because they are trying to push a product. And by being overdramatic by television product, that's all I'm going to say about that. But, you know, I've never experienced anything that was so bad that I'm not going to go back. I've had voices appear out of nowhere, 5 feet in front of me, that said, I'm going to kill you before you leave. That's actually on, if you go to YouTube now, it's that old Dead Truth episode. If you watch that, very ominous voice, very threatening. The thing actually followed us home, and the voice was in our vehicle later on that night, about 2 in the morning, when we got home. Things started to shake and rattle in my house on their own. But guess what? I'm still alive. Whatever it was, trying to intimidate, whatever. I've never come across anything that's that bad. Now, if I ever do, I'll let you know. And then I'll change my tune at that point in time. So it's not to say that maybe he had such a bad experience there, but I've done this just as much as he has, and I've been to, you know, just about as many places as that guy has. And, you know, if you do watch the show, you know, have you ever been possessed, Dennis? You know, have you ever been possessed by a spirit?
No. I mean, I've had my...
It happens every other episode there.
Yeah.
It happens every other episode there, and it's in a dramatic, you know. So you have to take it with a grain of salt and realize that there is a portion of what they do that's trying to be for entertainment purposes. And, you know, you have to just go with that. And I know the industry, I've talked to them, and it's just the way it is.
Along with that, too, if, and for everybody, this will verify what Brad is saying. If you watch the credits, there's two columns that it goes across in the credits that says writers. I'm just saying. So there are writers on that show.
Writers?
Yeah. Yeah, there's two columns of names of writers on that show.
Yeah, and I'm not sure because I can't tell if Ghost Lab had what they called writers or not, but writers might be the people that are putting the story itself together after it happens. This is a funny story, too, involving that. I don't know why I have so many funny stories, but I do. We went to the South Pittsburgh Hospital on one episode, and what happens is that when Barry and I are in an investigation or filming us, there's two camera guys, there's one audio guy, there's a producer and a director. They're all in the building. They're all like they're hidden around corners, out of sight and whatever. But what they're doing is they're monitoring you. They're listening to what you're saying, and they're making notes. You know, Brad saw a shadow at this time and ran towards it.
you know, Barry said, you know, saw something in Rick. So they're making notes so when they go back over the videotape later, they can kind of say, you know, they're basically marking where this stuff happened. Well, they left one of those notes laying around, and the people of the South Pittsburgh Hospital found it and were like, oh, look, Ghost Lab is scripted. Here's a piece of paper that says, you know, Brad sees a ghost and whatever. They thought that was pre-written out, not that it was actually notes being taken during the time. But it was funny because the only reason they said that is because at the end of the episode, they had a child living there, like 9 or 10-year-old kid. And Barry made the comment at the very end of the show that was used that said, well, if I had a kid, I wouldn't have him live here. Well, somebody saw, or people saw that, and they called Child Protective Services on them, and just basically gave the people a hard time. It wasn't our fault. We didn't, you know, we didn't call anybody. He just happened to make that kind of comment, and it set a firestorm. Well, they were pissed at that point, so they were looking for anything they could to, you know, make us look bad or whatever. And we just kind of, we just laughed and said, whatever. That's, and so, you know, if they actually have writers, I'm not sure if it's that kind of writing or if it's actually, hey, let's write the story before they even go into a place. That would be wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would definitely be crap.
But besides Ghost, speaking of locations, besides Ghost Lab and just everything that you've done in the paranormal world, is there any place that you kind of question, like, I don't know if I want to go back there just because of stuff that's happened?
No, see, I'm the opposite. I don't do the protective bubble. I don't say the prayer. I just go in guns blazing, looking for evidence because we're evidence based. If we found a place that was crazy and weird stuff happened, and that would be the place that I would want to go back to try to get something else. I'm the type that runs into the fire, not away from it. And I always wonder that about paranormal investigation, you know, people who are out there looking for it, who are scared of it. So it's like, if you're scared of it, don't go looking for it. That's like lighting a fire and then running away. If you're going to light the fire, you better, you know, stay there and control it and be warm.
I've never understood that about a lot of paranormal investigators who they do everything they can to keep anything from manifesting around them. So it's like, why are you even there?
Yeah,
that's a valid point. Now, have you ever had, we've seen I got scratched and it burned like hell, things like that. Have you ever had that occur to you?
I have been scratched one time, and it was the weirdest experience. It was in New Orleans. And we were at an old mortuary that during Hurricane Katrina, a lot of bums would come in there, and some of them were crack addicts or whatever, and a lot of them died. But it was an old mortuary, so obviously there was, you know, a lot of death there before that. But I was up in one of the rooms, and I was taunting like I do quite a bit. And whatever it was, I was calling, crack whore, come out, you crack whore, blah, blah, blah. And at that moment, the side of my neck, left side of my neck, just started to burn, almost like it was like it hit, like a really bad sunburn is how I would describe it. And I put my hand up there, and I'm like, I was thinking, in New Orleans, did I get bit by a bug or something? I'm having an allergic reaction. Barry had a thermal camera. He was across the room. He shined it over to me. He said, dude, let me look at that, because he could see the heat coming from my neck. We went over to the thermal camera, and sure enough, there were three long scratch marks from underneath my earlobe all the way down underneath my collar, a good 6-7 inches long, and it was bleeding. Blood was actually dripping from them, and Barry, we ran and we got a Q-tip and we swabbed the blood. Our first initial thought was, do ghosts have DNA? Because something scratched my neck and nothing was there. So does it have some sort of DNA? We didn't know. So we put it in a baggie, and nothing ever came of it because they didn't want to pay for the DNA testing, which is very expensive. would have been cool if they did. But we got an EVP at the very moment, once we went back and reviewed the evidence, the very moment I got scratched, there's a woman's voice very clear that says she don't like him. So it's like she don't like him, and then the scratch at the same time. So, you know, was that some sort of attack or revenge? I don't know. But you know what? I'd go in there and do it again if it didn't scratch me again, because this time I would do other things to try to capture what it was that was happening. And this is what I have to look into. Have you ever known anyone to be killed by a ghost?
Have I ever what?
Anyone ever been killed by a ghost that you know of?
Not besides the movies.
Exactly, yeah. And that's my point. It's the movies is where the things kill you. This, if it's interacting with you or whatever, you know, unless it's, and even going to demonic stuff, you know, if someone's possessed, I don't know if anyone who has died from a possession or if they have, the Catholic Church has covered it up, you know, I don't know. But from everything that I've seen and know, it's not going to necessarily hurt you. I mean, if you get pushed down the stairs or something like that, okay, maybe I can see that, or whatever the case may be. But, you know, if you're going after evidence, then go after it 100% and get it. And if you get good evidence, then go back and get more and correlate it over time. That's what's going to move this forward. That's how you make it a science, is you go out there and you experiment and you find out what works and you try to make it predictable. And so if you're running every time that something happens and you don't want to go back, you're never going to advance anything. And that's the way we look at it. I know we take such a different approach. I'm sure there's some viewers out there who are probably going, oh, my God, I can't believe he's saying that. But that's how I operate.
Well, and that's actually a correct way to operate. The one thing that I can't stand, and I've done guest investigations with teens and stuff around here and help them out if they've been, you know, a man or two down or something like that, or woman down, whatever. And the one thing that I hate more than anything is when somebody walks into a room, do an EVP session, they sit down, start the EVP session, the first question is there anybody here that wants to talk to us? No. Come on, really? The way that I look at it is, I'm going to talk to whatever's there as a living human being, as a person, if they were sitting right in front of me.
Right.
Hey, you know, so like do your research first. Hey, you know, Andy, and I know you passed away in this room. I'm here to talk with you. You know, how you doing? How's things going with you? Like, be friendly, courteous.
I've also noticed that people, and not that I'm trying to stereotype or generalize anyone, but I've noticed it's usually females, and it's usually like the sensitive or the ones who are, you know, say they're psychic and things like that, is they almost take like if they're talking to a baby approach. Like, could you please come here and speak to me? It's okay. It's okay if you come out and... It's like, you know what, if I'm an adult and you're talking to me like that, I'm going to walk away.
Exactly.
And they don't understand it. And they say, you know, you're so disrespectful and you yell and blah, blah, blah. I had a Native American guy who got on my case the other day because I was, one of our episodes, we were at a an Indian burial ground in West Virginia, and I was yelling. And I told him, I said, it's not me yelling because I'm trying to be belligerent. I said, look at it this way. All this stuff is frequency. If there's a veil, quote unquote, between the, you know, our world and that world, don't you think that I want to make my voice and my energy loud enough and strong enough to penetrate it so whatever's on the other side can hear it? And I said, you know, that's the only reason. I'm trying to increase my chances of something hearing me, okay? I said, we don't know how this works, but we do know it works in frequency. And I told him, I said, let's look at it this way.
If you had a child and you're in a forest and you lost your child in the trees somewhere, you couldn't find them. How are you gonna find them? Are you going to say, Billy, hello, Billy, if you're here, could you come over here And no, you're going to scream your ever-loving head off trying to increase your chances of that person who may be close or may be far to hear you. It's not a matter of being angry. It's a matter of being loud. I mean, my voice is loud as it is. You know, my kids, when I yell for them to come to dinner, you know, I'm sure the whole neighborhood can hear it, but that's just how my voice is. But on the same token, it works. It works for me. My kids come running, and guess what? We've got a lot of EVPs and a lot of responses because of it. So, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's nothing about just being disrespectful.
See, there's two things I've been talking a lot with people about, and you can choose to comment on whichever one you want, but or both. When it comes to quote-unquote residual hauntings or whatever, all right, you can kind of figure that that's a person that's residing in that area. When it comes to an intelligent haunt, if you start to go into that veil that you're talking about, which could also be realms and parallel dimensions, however you want to think about it.
Right.
If you're there addressing that person, is like, we can only be in one place at one time. There's been a few studies that have shown that there's that, like, it's almost able to duplicate or split energy and be at two places at one time in a certain way. Like, do you think, are spirits, when you go to those locations, do you think that they're there all the time, or do you think that they come back because they're being called upon?
Well, here's my theory in a nutshell. Maybe it's a little bit bigger than a nutshell. So you have, it's the classic, you have intelligent, you have residual. Well, the residual, I don't necessarily believe that it's intelligent that's hanging out in the area. I just think that it's something that's recorded on the environment. It's not intelligent at all. No matter how much you yell and call for it, it's only going to respond when the environment right and there's a trigger, almost like a needle on a record. You can put a vinyl record up to your ear, and you're not going to hear anything. You only hear something when you put the needle on the record. And that's how I see residual. Intelligence, and there's probably a lot of religious people out there who are going to, you know, think about this, but, you know, if you believe in God and you believe, or, you know, whatever your God is, and you believe in afterlife, that you're an intelligent spirit afterwards, well, as a human, we all have free will, right? I can go right now and go knock on my neighbor's door if I wanted to, or I don't have to, or I can go eat a cheeseburger if I want to, or I don't have to. You know, it's all free will. I can come and go places as I please. When you die, why is your energy, which is what's actually driving your physical body now, why does the free will stop at that point in time? I think that the intelligent spirits that you see here, that they choose to stay here by free will. And at some point, they can choose to move on, as some people call going to the light or whatever they want to call it. They go to that higher, you know, level of being or consciousness. But they have the choice. They can go there, or they can stay here for as long as they want. And if people are talking about time, you know, time to God is, you know, 1 minute to 1,000 years or whatever. You know, who's to say that you can't just stay here until you want to go? You know, maybe that's your free will. And once you go, you go. Maybe that's why there's not hauntings of every single dead person who ever died or lived, because those people choose to go, and the people that choose to stay here, the intelligent ones, are here. I feel that it's your energy is all based on free will, and whatever God or whatever it is that controls the universe allows that free will even after your body's gone.
And that's a great, great answer, and I agree with that. The other thing that I can't understand, and I can't really, but I've never gotten like a, holy shit, yeah, you're absolutely right answer to this. The woman in white, the woman in black, the woman in red, the guy with the black coat and the top hat, how in the hell do clothes transfer over? Why wouldn't a spirit be walking around naked?
So, let's look at it two ways. Let's look at it as a residual, okay? So, if you see a woman in a red dress or white or hair in a bun or whatever the case may be where you can describe it, it's because, for two reasons, for the residual part, whatever that light energy was or whatever the imagery was when it was alive or whatever dimension it was in, embeds itself in the environment and replays almost like a film projector onto the environment, you are physically seeing what has been recorded as if you're looking at a television set. You know what I mean? So you're going to be able to see the red dress, the bun in the hair, and all that kind of stuff. That's an apparition that's residual that's just playing itself back on the environment that you happen to see or a dimension that you happen to cross, and you're able to see into that whatever other dimension, and you're seeing that physical makeup. Now, on the intelligent side, I just kind of alluded to that. The intelligent side could be you cross dimensions. You're actually looking into another dimension, future or past, into your dimension, and you're actually seeing the physical on that side, and it's for a brief moment. Now, here's the flip side: is they could probably see you too. And I've had that experience where it seems like whatever it was commenting on us. The other side of it is that let's say I am intelligent. Now, I think the shadow figures, shadow people, are the intelligent ones. Why? Because they don't have clothes. They don't have anything like that. They're just a black hole of a former human being, basically. And they're cold spots, and they move erratically, and you know, they don't really follow physics. I think that when you see shadow people, those are what are the intelligent spirits. And when you see the ones where it's full color and whatever else, I think those are the residual ones. Now let's say they are intelligent spirits. Well, if for some reason I can manifest myself, maybe I can manifest an image that's in my mind. And an image that's in my mind when I died was the clothes that I used to wear. So that's why you see period clothes. You know, you're not going to have a Civil War ghost who's going to manifest in bell bottoms and a disco shirt. Because that mental state never knew that. And I know I'm kind of getting deep on that, but I've done a lot of thinking about this, obviously.
No, and honestly, that is a really, really good answer to that question. The other thing that I was thinking of, too, as I presented to a lot of people about it, is your physical mind, like you, Dennis, myself, is we're projecting the image of a person of what we see, and your brain is trying to make sense of it. If there happens to be any sort of shade in the manifestation, if it's a red hue to it, you're going to say a woman in a red dress. And your brain actually pieces that together. Not that there is a woman in a red dress. There may be a figure that, through the spectrum of light that your eye is seeing at that moment, it's like, oh, well, she was in a red dress. So it's something that we actually manifest as clothing for them.
And having experienced seeing that woman in a red dress, that I go back to New Orleans, I saw one turned around. She was standing right in front of me, red hair. She looked like a 1800 prostitute, and gone in an instant. But why was it so vivid to me? And to me, it was because, like I said, because your mind is a very powerful thing. Your mind can project. Your mind can make other people think certain ways and act certain ways. You know, its power of suggestion is very good, but your mind can actually control the environment, and that is a possibility too. I mean, there's never going to be a solid answer to it. We can only theorize, but you know, it's good that you actually start thinking and you're theorizing logically. Well, maybe it could be this, and maybe it could be that. As opposed to, you know, it's the spirit of a woman in a red dress, and that's just how it is. There's no thought behind it. You know, if there is the spirit world out there, and it's based on energy, and it's based on natural laws,
then it's all going to behave under the same natural laws that we have to operate under. You know, electricity and needing energy sources and projecting and, you know, being visible or feeling sensations or, you know, whatever the case may be. It's acting in our own physical universe. Therefore, it has to operate off the properties of our own physical universe.
Yeah.
And that's one of the questions that I generally will ask during any EVP session is, do you feel temperature variables? I want to know if it's, able to, experience what we are experiencing. I mean, just because they're not in our same plane, are they experiencing what we do? Can they sense time? Those are, that's some of the questions that I ask in almost every one of my EVP sessions. I want to know what the experience is like on that side for that entity. That's the reason why I got into this.
I'll tell you what's a really good movie. And I know it's a movie, but it made me really think, and it made me theorize about a lot of things. If you've ever seen the movie The Others with Nicole Kidman.
Love that movie.
That is a very thought-provoking movie about how her existence is real to her, but yet she can only go out bounds a little bit until she's in a fog. She has to come back to... So she's at her house, it's always foggy, right? And she leaves to try to find her husband, but she gets in such a thick fog that she has to come back to what she can or can't leave. And then all of a sudden her husband, who gets killed in the war, all of a sudden appears out of the fog and comes into the house, and they all think that they're just living this life until they realize that they think their house is haunted, but it's not haunted. It's the people who live there in the future that they're crossing dimensions. And it's a very, very thought-provoking movie about how ghosts work. And we actually have a theory that we operate. We call it the Others Theory. And it's just that. It's when they can react to you, when they see you, or they make comments on you. It's just like that movie. But if people listening, if you've never watched that movie, you have to watch that movie because it really makes you think.
Well, and that was a great, and I think the director of that was Alejandro Amenábar, who he's done a couple other independent films that are they go down the same path, the same level, that are intelligent movies. I mean, you watch something by like M. Night Shyamalan, it's like, dude, you're all over the board. Like, come on, man, really?
Yeah.
But no, that was a very, very well done movie.
Yeah.
You know, see, I've got the location that I kind of train my team in. I have one room in that location that I've gotten an EVP from the same voice every single time I've gone back. And every time I've gone back, he's called me a fucker, which I kind of find funny. The rest of my team can go in there. They can provoke the snot out of me. Nothing. I just simply go in that room. And the last time that I had my team with me, I stepped into the room. The investigator that was behind me, I hadn't said a word. The investigator behind me makes the statement that, we were all in here and you didn't say anything. Now Dennis is here. What do you have to say? And the response that came back crystal clear on EVP was, fucker, I want to fight. Why I got to be fucker all the time? But it's the same voice every time. I've actually been choked in that room. I felt the pressure on my throat. Started into a coughing fit. Right before I started coughing, you can hear a EVP just plain as day says, choke that fucker. After probably 4 or 5 seconds, 6 seconds of me coughing, you hear that same voice kind of holler, "Get a grip." So I definitely believe in the existence of intelligent haunt versus residual. And that one will definitely be one of, yeah, that one falls under the others theory, I think.
Yeah. And it also, what I've also seen is that it's almost like the intelligent ones, it's a learned behavior that they can, you know, learn to manipulate or control things. Like if you see objects move or something, it's like, is that because whatever it is has learned to manipulate this physical environment to be able to throw that, you know, that lamp shit, you know, that base across the room to break that window, to, you know, slam the door or whatever the case may be. So if it's physical enough where it can touch the physical things in our environment, why couldn't it wrap its hands around your neck and start choking you or scratch you or whatever the case may be?
Yeah, it definitely, scenario you just mentioned made me think of Ghost, where he's trying to learn to flip the bottle cap in the subway system.
Exactly. And then I thought of the same thing. I've always compared, but I've already used one movie reference. I didn't want everyone to think that all my theories came off of movies. But in a way, they do, because I watch movies a lot, and I get, you know, it makes me think about, oh, that's a cool idea, and it just leads me down to another thing. But, yeah, I think that some things are learned behavior. It's almost like, you know, when they do go over, it's now you're in a different world and you're in a different state. Now how do you manipulate the physical environment? And it's a learning experience.
Oh, and I was gonna actually bring up the same thing that Dennis did too about Ghost. When he's in the subway, he's hitting the sign, he's flipping the bottle cap, but when it comes down to it, we'll never know the answer to this until we're on that side, but if you hear a door slam or you get pushed down the stairs or you get scratched or whatever, it has to be kind of confusing if the entity or spirit in that environment doesn't know exactly how to do that and hasn't perfected it yet. Maybe it's not trying to hurt somebody, which is going to be received as quote-unquote demonic, but they're trying to make contact in any way they can. But
yeah,
it's like if you push somebody too hard, you're like, oh shit, I did not mean to push you that hard. Like physical,
right?
World, you're a football,
yeah,
player. If you hit somebody too hard and you shouldered them right in the helmet, and you looked at them and you're like, oh dude, I am so sorry, I did not mean to hit you that hard.
Well,
there may be feelings of remorse.
Get up, punk. I totally believe that. I totally believe that. And I always say, imagine yourself in a world where you're screaming your head off and no one can hear you. You're going to get frustrated. If you can grab a chair and throw it at somebody, that's the kind of frustration that you might be feeling. So I always tell people, don't look at things that, oh my God, this thing flew across the room at me, it's the devil. No, it's whatever it is frustrated and is trying to do something. So it's like, whenever something like that happens, acknowledge it. I see you just threw that chair across the room. You know what? If you talk really loud, I got this recorder here, maybe you can say something. It's, don't run from it. That is your opportunity. When paranormal activity happens, it happens fairly quickly, and it doesn't happen for very long. And so when it has manifested to that point where there's so much energy where it can move something, do something else to get something else at that moment in time. Don't just go, wow, that was cool. Okay, see y'all later. That was a good experience.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Oh, I hate that.
All right. Well, I want to run a theory by you that Matt and I have been working on. You know, you hear so many people that have lost a loved one that within, like, the first 7 to 10 days, they always say that, you know, my aunt or my mother, my grandmother, whatever, came back and spoke to me and told me goodbye. Well, if there is a learning curve, you know, where the spirits are trying to figure out how to communicate with us, do you, one of the things that we're thinking is that there's like this 7 to 10 day, I guess, grace period where they can do that at free roam. And then that time frame is closed off. Because then you'll hear that, you know, well, I haven't heard from them in however long. What's your thought on it? Is there kind of a little free time frame there?
I don't know if there's a limited time frame. I think it goes back to what I was talking about earlier, how you have free will. You know, and those are known as revenant spirits, the ones that come back basically to say goodbye and then you never hear from them again. And I think it goes back to what I was talking about where they have free will. So their free will is, you know what, I'm going to use this time, I want to go back, I want to, you know, do something to let them know I'm okay, and then I'm going to go off to that other existence. That's their free will. They're choosing it to do it right then and there. Maybe some people choose to do it immediately. They never come and haunt anybody. Or maybe some people are too scared of maybe what's happening on the other side of that other existence in that light that they don't want to go to it. They just kind of are sticking around because they're unsure, you know, as to what the next step is. So I don't know if it's like a time clock starts ticking and you can do it, and that's all the time you have to do that. I think it's just a matter of, you know, a choice that, hey, I want to go here, I'm going to take 5 minutes to do something crazy to let them know I'm here, and I'm out of here.
Okay. So do you think they can cross back and forth, like once they've, quote-unquote, gone to the light or crossed over or whatever, however you want to term it, do you think they can come back to, you know, let's say little Johnny, the grandson's just being a dick and Grandma wants to tune him in? Do you think they can pass back and forth?
I don't think that it can come back. I don't know. Like I said, I'm big time theorizing now, but this is my personal beliefs. I think once you cross that threshold, that you're not going to be able to come back in that form, but you might be able to come back in other ways, like, you know, influencing through, you know, whatever the case may be. But you're not going to be able to physically walk into the room and appear and whatever else. I just, like I said, that is my own. We're getting way beyond, you know, what I would consider things that we could even prove. Because, like you said before, you ain't going to know how this stuff works until until it's too late. And by then, you can't tell anybody.
Well, no, that's not necessarily true. Matt and I have a pact that whichever one dies first, the other is to rush to their side at the first possible ability and hold an EVP session and see if they can talk to the other.
Let me know how that works.
Here's the flaw in that theory. If I'm the one that dies first, Matt's screwed. He's still not going to be able to prove jack shit because he's going to be going, Dennis, are you there? Cupcakes. Dennis, are you able to talk to us? Bicycle. I'm just going to give him stupid shit off the wall answers.
Yeah. or this is your opportunity to say, fucker.
There you go. Well, no, because then he would know it was me. But yeah, it's I don't know. I mean, there's so many theories that everybody is working on, and you know, everybody has their own theory. Everybody has their own thoughts, and I mean, a lot of them make a lot of sense. Some of them, I don't know. I think they'd be much better to just stick to, you know, putting a small rock in the pipe and work on that.
And unfortunately, there is no right answer. Everyone's going to have their opinion. Everyone's going to have their method. You know, it's just like religion. You know, the Christians think they're right. The Jewish people think they're right. The Muslims think they're right. Everybody else is wrong. But it's the tolerance, you know, among the people that, you know, among the different religions, that's what's necessary. And I think that you see in the paranormal, not that I'm comparing paranormal to, you know, major world religions, but, you know, the intolerance going back and forth. There's certain things that I can't stand. there's certain things that, you know, if I see someone doing it, I'll walk out of the room. But in the same respect, that's how they are comfortable with it, and that's how they deal with it. So I can't sit there and judge them. I don't have to do it that way myself. I can explain my reasons and my theories and my, you know, things like that, and other people can take from it or leave it however they want. I'm never going to force my opinion down anyone's throat. I'm just saying the way I approach it from a very logical standpoint, to try to show that there's nothing mystical and magical about this. It's real. It's real life. It can be shown. It can be documented, and it can be predicted in a lot of cases.
So, beyond the shadow of a doubt, what's, like, do you believe that paranormal exists on Earth? Like, you would put 100% of your credibility saying that, yes, ghosts do exist.
I would. And the reason I say that is because it's how you look at paranormal. We don't understand everything, and we never will. Therefore, anything that you don't understand is paranormal. I've seen things in my life. I've seen images. I've seen full-body apparitions. I've got them on, you know, I've heard things with my own ears that there is absolutely no explanation that I can come up for. Therefore, my conclusion is that ghosts do exist. So, yes, my reputation is based on my own experiences and my own research and my own things. So based on that, I'm going to say, yes, I believe it is. And no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But that's me. That's not the next guy down the street.
Well, I have to say I've got the same exact answer. I would stake my reputation and you know, all my what little bit of semi-useless shit that I own. I mean, I've heard voices where nobody is at. I've seen things move that nobody touched. I know there is something that has to be able to do it. I just couldn't see what it was. So, I mean, without a shadow of a doubt, I would say that, yes, ghosts exist, spirits exist.
Maybe they're like alien life forms that are invisible that, you know, work in our environment and study us. You can go on and theorize about a lot of stuff, but the fact of the matter is that in itself is paranormal. It's causing things that we don't understand. Therefore, that's what we're defining as a quote-unquote ghost. And, you know, I always tell people, they're like, you know, how can you believe this? Nothing's ever happened to me. I said, when it does, you will believe in it. But until it does, you have every right to say that you'll never believe in it. But because you can't. You cannot believe in something like this until it happens to you and you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this stuff is real.
Yeah, exactly.
See, and
my leading.
I think that's why Dennis and I get along so well, is because until I have like a Tonight Show style sit-down interview with the spirit, I have evidence, yeah. I have a shit ton of it. But I don't have that defining thing. And I have personal experiences. I have, like, Class A's. I have holy grails of things. But I don't have it all in one package to have the answer to say that, yes, this is what it is. This is a quote-unquote ghost. Like, that's just my personal thing. And
yeah,
am I still going to search for it? Hell yeah. Am I still going to try new theories to get to where I am going to definitively say, yes, ghosts do exist? Sure. Am I going to half-ass anything? Hell no. But I just haven't had that wow, like, complete package moment for me yet.
Right. And when you do, and even if you don't even get a recording of it, if it's not on tape, when it happens to you and it's your personal experience, it's all you're going to need. And
yeah.
No one's ever going to convince you otherwise.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I've got a story that goes right along with that. My lead investigator is 18 years as a law enforcement officer. There's a location here just south of Richmond by, I don't know, 10 miles. It's in Rikers Historical Park. A little background on it, real brief. It was the second settlement in the U.S., or in the New World, so to speak. 1611, this place was settled. They had chased the Indians out, took the land. 1622, the Indians got pissed and came back and massacred them to take their land back. So 350-plus people were killed. Well, my lead investigator, Graham, is about your size. Like I said, he's 18 years as a law enforcement officer. Something grabbed his belt loop, gave a tug on the back of his pants, and as he put it, right by my ear so I could feel it, went, "Hey!" I came back to that location. I had stepped away to use the John, and when I came back, he is pale. I'm like, "What in the hell?" He's like, "You and I need to fucking talk." I mean, it just shook into his core. So that was his defining moment that, you know what, I'm no longer hunting ghosts. I am now investigating the paranormal. I'm like, wonderful. That's what I wanted you to do from day one.
Let's get back to work.
Yeah. Now quit shaking, quit trembling, go change your underwear because you shit stinks, and let's go back and, you know, do some more investigating.
Well, no, and that's the thing is I've had the full body apparitions. I've had Class A EVPs. I've had, you know, the shit move around me. I mean, hell, at Naomi's house, you put a chair in one location in the barn, you can walk out of there, and I know for 100% fact that there is nobody in that place at all. You walk back in, and it's 25 to 30 feet from where you put the chair. Then you were the last person in there. But, so there's all these bits and pieces, but there's never been a defining, like, and Brad, I don't know if you've had this or not, which put you in that to where it scared the crap out of you. Not literally, obviously, but just in general. Scared the crap out of you that you're like, you know what, I've never been scared like that. Like, nothing has ever been that impacting. And I don't know if it's my scientific mind too much at work, that everything that happens just makes me question it more, or what it is. But
right, because what happens is that as soon as you accept the fact that that chair moves 25, 30 feet by itself, or you witness it, or, you know, there's no other explanation for it, then all life as you know it changes. You know, the thought of afterlife changes. The what-ifs change. And it's almost like it's human nature to not want to, it's like, you know what, if I don't think about it, if I don't deal with it, then it didn't happen. And that's where, you know, I'm just kind of open to everything. And whatever happens, happens. You know, if an asteroid comes and they say, you know, there's an asteroid going to hit in 2 years, destroy the Earth, what can I do about it? You know, it's just that it's once you kind of take that relaxed feeling about it, then everything else just kind of rolls through. You're not really scared of places. I will admit that there's some places where I'm a little nervous to be in. Like, I kind of look over my shoulder. I always feel like I'm being watched. Maybe I have tunnel vision when I walk through. I don't want to look around. But, you know, that's just human nature.
Yeah, and I've had that too. The asteroid thing, just call Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck and they'll take care of it. That would be number 3 a movie reference for the evening.
I think that feeling of being watched and so forth is just human nature. You're in a location where you're not really familiar with the surroundings all that well. You know, that feeling of apprehension, you know, I think that's just human nature. I don't think it plays into, you know, just, I don't know, that feeling of uncomfortable. I mean, hell, I get that in a train station or airport. You know, you're just not real familiar with your surroundings, and there's always going to be that slight apprehension.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems a little stronger when you're in the middle of the, you know, old abandoned building or, you know. I mean, when I do residential hauntings or residential investigations, I don't have that feeling at all, simply because I'm in a home, comfortable environment instead of, you know, in the middle of some jacked up bat and rat and mold infested place. But I think that goes just as human nature. Now, what is one place that you would absolutely love to go back to that you had one of those, that was such a great experience, I'd love to do that one again?
Well, I'm going back in August, and I've been back several times since. It's Gettysburg. Those battlefields out in Gettysburg are something that everyone needs to experience. Have you ever been to a place people always say, oh, there's a heaviness to it. There's a heavy feeling about this place. The entire town of Gettysburg is a heavy feeling. Whatever happened there back in 1863, that three-day battle, really screwed that environment up big time. All that death, all that destruction, all that conflict, all that struggle in a small area has really impacted the way people feel. And people who don't even believe in ghosts will sit there and say, yeah, I just drove into town and I just feel depressed. You know, that place is where I had that one, you know, oh shit moment that changed my life forever back when I was, you know, 20 or not 20 years old. I was 17 years old. It was back in 1990. That 20 some odd years ago, 24 years ago. And to witness those 10 or 15 soldiers moving across the field, videotaping it and having them disappear right in your very eyes is like, you know, that's it. And I will go back there every single time, and I'll stand on that field, and I'll look, and I'll just start to theorize and think, and, you know, about all the theories of now of everything that I've done, you know, goes back to that moment on that field. And I'm actually, when we go up there in August, one of the things I'm going to do is part of the events is I'm going to do a battlefield tour where I'm the tour guide, and I'm giving everyone the tour because I know everything there is to know about Gettysburg, the battle, you know, the everything physical, and also a lot of the ghost stories. And I'll take them out to that field and, you know, talk about, you know, my experience and how that just really changed my life. But it's like a mecca for me. It's like a, you know, making it to the Super Bowl. As you go back there and say, this is where it all started, and, it, you know, it all comes full circle back to this. And, you know, I've been there 100 times, and every time I get excited about going back there. So that's the one place that I always love getting back to.
Yeah, that's, you know, I've listened a dozen times to your story on seeing that group of soldiers walk across the battlefield. One of the things that's always puzzled me is typically in an eyewitness account, they've seen one, maybe two spirits together, but to see a whole band of them like that, you know, it just baffles me.
To see their flags, to see their swords, to see their drums, to see even on the videotape, you know, it's Union. It's a Union regiment flag. It's a, you know, it wasn't just a flash in my mind, and that's how the whole physicalness. I witnessed it on videotape disappear in front of me, but how was my video camera able to videotape something like that, the physical. That's where the whole thing came out. It's got to react to the physical universe. It's got to have physical properties. It's got to, you know, and that's where the wheels started turning on all the scientific theory and how the stuff worked. And just every time I go to Gettysburg, something weird happens. When we filmed there, we had a day off, and we were playing golf. And we, all of a sudden, all of us, there's about five of us playing, smelled gun smoke or gunpowder, as if the whole field, like as if we were in a cloud of gunpowder. And then all of a sudden it was gone. You know, there is no explanation for that. Gunpowder has a very particular smell, and to be that strong out in the middle of a field for no reason, you know, we hear cannon fire all the time. You hear things walking. You see things standing at a distance on a porch or whatever else. I mean, that place is so freaking haunted. It's almost like people who want to have some sort of experience go there and just spend a few days there. But don't look for a ghost. Just go out and hang out. And something unexplained is going to happen. It happens to me every single time. It's something different, whether it's big or small.
And hey, real quick, my friend Brandon, who's from like southeast Chicago, southwest Indiana, and this will kind of tie into it too. Plug wise, is there any way that when you post an investigation or can you request an investigation and where to get in to like the group of the places that you go to?
Okay. Right now I'm revamping the website. It's everydayparanormal.com. So that's the main site. Right now it's down because I'm physically, when I get off the phone, I'm rebuilding the website. That is where to go. One place, the best place probably to go is if you go to Facebook and you look up Brad Kling of Everyday Paranormal and Discovery Channel's Ghost Lab. That's my official fan page. And if you like that page and you follow it, that's where all that stuff will be posted. That's where I'll go out and I'll say, hey, planning a thing in Chicago, looking for 10 to 15 people. If you're interested, send me an email. And that's where that information will flow through. Basically those two places, the website and Facebook page, and that's how, you know, I get the information out.
That works. Anything coming up in the near future that you wanna plug? Any events or any like paracons or anything that you're gonna be at or going to?
No, I've been so busy this year preparing with my documentary stuff, getting locations and kind of working that angle of things. As I mentioned, there is Gettysburg, but that one's full. That's going to be in August. I'm going to Australia in June for 2 weeks. Sydney and Melbourne, they're having this big convention, but it's basically for me and Barry's going with me. Barry and I. It's just about us, and we're going to do some investigations at a couple places in Sydney and Melbourne, and we'll be out there for 2 weeks, but that's in Australia. So I don't know if your listeners, I don't know if there's anyone listening in Australia, but there could be. We'll be coming out there.
we have a few people out there in Australia that listen to the archives. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have them
we'll be out there
global.
June 10th through June 24th, something like that. But, I'm definitely not looking forward to a long flight going over there, but once you're over there, I guess it'll be pretty fun. other than that, I'm preparing to film, you know, my documentary. I have several locations I'm going to start out with, and I have plenty more that are lined up that we just have to schedule and get out to. But some of the future places, Chicago. I am looking at to do a couple of events in Chicago in the near future, and L.A., Los Angeles. Those are two places that are kind of on my short list on the radar.
All right. Well, Chicago just hit me up. I'll get with Ursula. We'll get the permissions where need be or wherever you want to do. Yeah, well, we'll get that taken care of for you.
Okay.
And
I love
don't forget
Chicago.
The show.
My favorite big city in the country is Chicago.
That's a flat out why, but I appreciate it.
I don't know. Just, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the deep dish pizza that I just eat my weight in when I go.
Well, you can't leave out your East Coast friends here. I mean, come on, show the East Coast some love. If you make it to the Richmond area, I've got several places that I can take you. That
I'm telling you what, if you have the access to a place that's good for like an event like that, and you know we can keep the cost down and stuff like that, I'm there. You let me know what it is, and I can get it filled up in a day.
All right. Well, we'll make it happen because I've got a location here that is run by donations and so forth. It's a building that existed pre-Civil War. It was a hotel. I'll actually give you the name of it. I'm going to throw a plug out, and Angel will love me for this. It's in Gordonsville, Virginia, which is about 45 minutes to an hour north of Richmond, maybe half hour outside Charlottesville. But it's called the Exchange Hotel. It was a receiving hospital during the Civil War, which means it took in both Union and Confederate troops. It was guarded by both sides simultaneously. You could have a Confederate soldier and a Union soldier standing side by side guarding the hotel so nothing would happen to the wounded that were inside. They have photographs of the location. The second floor on the right, there are two rooms that were the surgical suites. And they have pictures of body limbs literally stacked to the windows. It's estimated that there's some 5,000 soldiers buried around the premises. And the chief of police for Gordonsville had a full-bodied apparition run at him. He could describe to a T, and he said it came at, he was actually with another officer in the middle of the night on a burglary call for the alarm system got off. He said they turned the corner in this one room, they're standing side by side. He said, I looked and I saw this man eye to eye running at me, and before I could draw my weapon, thinking that it was a full live person, this man ran through me and my partner and just disappeared into the wall behind us. Fantastic location. I can make it happen within like 1 week, anytime that you want to get up here.
Okay. Yeah. You have my number, so just text me and let me know, and we'll see if I can get it on the book somehow.
Yeah, I'll touch base with Angel. She actually runs the place. I'll see when she wants to have an event like that. She doesn't, you know, often. We've actually got a Paracon coming up there. Trying to think when that one is. Off the top of my head, I don't recall. But, yeah, the Exchange Hotel here in Virginia, wonderful place, brother. I'll make sure to hook you up with it. And I think you'll get some great, great evidence out of it, too.
Okay. And always, so anything Civil War and Revolutionary War is right up my alley, too. So I'm a real big buff in the history of those places.
Oh, and real quick about turn of the century, one thing that Ursula and I are, Ursula Bielski, I don't know if you know who she is or not. But
I've heard she had a Chicago tours at one time.
Yeah, she still does them, and any investigations I have or any investigation that she comes up with, we work together on. So Ursula's basically part of my team unofficially, and I'm part of her team unofficially. So But no, that's my baby girl. I love her to death. One thing that we're trying to bring a little bit more into the forefront, and you being as involved in history as you are, is the Eastland disaster.
Yep, the Eastland River disaster. Yep, I know a lot about that.
Which nobody seems to recognize.
We almost, right. In Ghost Lab, investigated Harpo Studios. We were one approval away. Actually, it was Oprah Winfrey who would have let us come in to investigate that. But she didn't want it. So that didn't happen. But because that's where they stored all the bodies.
Yeah. There was that part of it, or makeshift morgue was Excalibur Nightclub. People say, I don't believe that, though. And there are also a couple of the factories which are now shut down that the previous owners of the factories have documentation who have passed away because they were kind of turn of the century as well, in their old age, but have the documentation that has been released to the Chicago Historical Society about where all those locations were at. So
the Eastland would be the perfect subject for my new documentary called Curiosity. So if you're interested in actually having that filmed as a documentary, let me know.
Yeah, Ursula's got a lot of stuff on it. I mean, her being who she is in Chicago has a lot more access to stuff than I do. But all I say is, hey, Ursula, I need this. Okay, give me a half hour. Or vice versa, depending on what it is. But, that's something that I really, really want to kind of bring more to the forefront is the Eastland disaster. It's the highest death rate of any maritime disaster on the Great Lakes, and I believe, besides the Titanic, like the third in history.
Yeah.
And
it's the greatest in the United States, even ocean-wise. Because the Titanic was not in the U.S. waters. So in any U.S. waters, it's the largest disaster.
Yeah, and the Edmund Fitzgerald gets all the credit, which that one's very, very interesting as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, if it's something, and if it works out in the spring or summertime to where I'll talk to her, I'll get with you about it. If it's something you'd be interested in, I also have a boat on Lake Michigan that we can actually tour the waters on.
Hey, I'm there. Just let me know, Chicago. I'll be up in Chicago. Chicago is a 2-hour flight from San Antonio direct, so it doesn't take much to get up there.
And for sure, I'll get you a big ass deep dish pizza and a nice cold pitcher of beer.
Let's do it.
You know, I might even have to come to Chicago now.
I said, big, nice deep dish pizza, a big ass pitcher of beer. Dennis is going to fly in for that one too.
With or without a plane, if I have to, I'll get a bat suit and fly myself up there. But, well, we are going to leave you alone now, Brad. Thank you very much for being on with us tonight, brother. It has, as always, it has been a pleasure.
No problem. And it's not lip service. Just let me know about those other things, and we'll see what we can do to get it done.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, you guys.
I sent you a thing on Facebook to link to the Exchange Hotel. So you can kind of look at it and get an idea of the location and the history on it and everything. But I'll definitely talk to Angel, and I'll see when is available, and I'll coordinate between us all, and we'll definitely make something happen there. It'll be a great time.
All right. All right, you guys take it easy. Have a good evening, and I guess we'll talk to you later.
Yeah,
sounds
you
good.
Too.
You take care down there, brother.
See ya.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Good night.
Excellent show, brother. So, you know, I love the way he thinks. He just, you know, is able to think. Well, he thinks a lot like we do. Everything's, you know, very philosophical, puts a lot of thought into all parts of the field. You know, he doesn't go in half-cocked on anything. Just, you know, a lot of intelligence going into it. You know, I love talking with him. But
yeah, I fully agree. It's, you know, when you have somebody who breaks it down, then not saying just, you know, to the audience who listen, but just in general, like in his own mind, and then says, hey, this is how it's been done. I'm going to try this. That's exactly what needs to be done.
Yeah. Don't follow in the same damn footsteps. Make your own prints and try to find something different, something new. Yeah. There is no quote-unquote orthodox or unorthodox way to do this. There's no cut-and-dried method that, you know, this is how it has to be done. There's no protocol for this. You know, investigating the paranormal, whether it's UFOs, Bigfoot, ghosts, you know, there is no protocol on it. None of this is cut and dried. You know, if brain surgery, if they only went about it in one way, and that was to do the lobotomy, they drill a hole in the front of your brain and they put the little whip inside there and they turned everything to jello. If it never progressed from that, we wouldn't be where they are today, where they're able to start giving people back mobility and intelligence after a, you know, head trauma. And it took somebody stepping out and going, you know what, they've done it this way for years. I want to try this and see if this will work. This field is kind of the same way in the fact that it has to be, you have to think outside the box. If you don't, we're never going to expand the size of the box.
But in a lot of ways, too, I'm not playing devil's advocate. I'm actually commending what you said in a different way. We've experienced a ton of quacks that the medical field also experienced. And, oh, just drink this snake oil and it's going to cure your cancer. It's going to cure your heart disease. Well, no, that's not true. And it's kind of reached, you know, it's reached that milestone to where you have the ones that do it on an educated level and you have the ones that do it just to make a name for themselves. Same shit, different bag.
Yeah. But, you know, being able to step outside the normal thinking on the way shit is done now has increased where this field is at hundreds of times over. Whereas if we had all stayed inside that same little way of thinking, we wouldn't get anywhere. I mean, who in the hell ever thought that, you know, all right, well, let's bring in a EMF meter and, you know, try to correlate paranormal activity with electromagnetic fields. You know, way back in the early 1900s, when they were just starting to do investigations to figure out, you know, the paranormal, the spirit world, I'm sure they didn't think about EMFs. They probably didn't. I don't know if they even knew what an EMF was back then. Well, they had, they understood some bit of magnetics because they had compasses. But I don't think they thought about tying it into this research.
then maybe they did. I mean, paranormal research goes back, you know, I mean, shit, look at ancient Egyptians.
Yeah. I mean, you know, even they understood that, you know, spirits were among us. But it's definitely kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, but, for sure.
All right, brother. I am flat-ass exhausted. I stayed up quite late last night reviewing audio, drinking Fireball with Allie and Ryan, and was up early this morning, which I saw a thing that said that Fireball is the most, what the hell is it, most sold liquor or something, most, I'm trying to find it again.
It's a fad drink. So
I mean, I did peppermint schnapps back in the day, and it's pretty much like that.
Yeah, and that was Goldschlager, and then yeah. One thing I will say, Fireball in the neck of an angry orchard is really good.
I have to try that.
So, drink the neck of an angry orchard, dump in a shot of Fireball, and enjoy.
Now, do you just turn the angry orchard up and down the whole thing, or?
Yeah. So, Fireball, angry orchard, put your thumb over the top, turn it over, let it soak in. Another good combination, and this is for all the alcoholics that are up with us still. Take a Corona, put a shot of Bacardi Limon in it, turn it up, then drink that. Just not in excess because it creeps up on you. I'm surprised that that's not part of the EVP session that we have recorded for me.
Yeah, well, nothing in excess, ladies and gentlemen. We would like to state that up front. Always drink in moderation, unless you're somewhere safe and don't happen to even, in which case, just have a freaking ball.
And if you're an angry drunk, don't drink in moderation at all.
Yeah,
don't drink in excess at all. No moderation, no excess. Just don't drink. Make sure everybody that you're with is having fun.
Yeah, just say no.
It puts the lotion on its skin or else it gets fucking.
That was before we went out and I had vampire teeth in. That didn't work out too well.
What, do you want me to play the one after we were drunk?
No.
I'll do that.
It puts the lotion on the skin or else it gets the hose again.
It's not my words, it's your cackling laugh afterwards that cracks me up.
Oh, God, man, I had tears running down my cheeks laughing so damn hard. Ah. All right, let's see if I can find something decent to play us out to. What do you think?
As long as it's not Metallica.
Yeah, that one sounded like shit. But I think I want to do this. We've spoken about haunted bed and breakfast. We've spoken about haunted asylums. Spoken about haunted hotels. So I think that's what I will do. I will pick a song based on a locational theme. So on that note, ladies and gentlemen.
Hold on. You also can't forget about the fact that we've talked about misguided ghosts.
About what?
Misguided ghosts.
Is that a hint, or can I play the one that I already had my finger hovered over?
That's a hint there, man.
All right. Let me scroll up to that one and find it. But while I search for this and get ready, Ladies and gentlemen, it's been another wonderful night here on Full Spectrum Radio. Our guest tonight was Brad Kling. I hope you were able to listen in. Hope you were able to get some good insight, get some good education and some thoughts and theories and techniques that you can incorporate in your next paranormal investigation. I am CPR Dennis.
I am CPR Matt.
There you go. You can find us at CPR Matt or CPR Dennis on Facebook and Twitter. You can also find us at Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers at .com and the Facebook. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. We hope you have a great week.
I'm just a ghost.